Now, the White House announced last week that the 2020 International Group of Seven Summit would be held at President Trump's golf resort in Doral, Florida. The backlash to that announcement was swift. Criticism came not just from President Trump's political opponents, but from some of his allies as well. Central to the controversy was the fact that the president and his family could profit off of the multi-nation meeting. This created the appearance of conflicts of interest, but potentially violated a clause in the Constitution. Since then, the president has abandoned that plan and blasted his critics, saying, quote, "You people with this phony emoluments clause," end quote. Our next guest joins us to talk about the emoluments clause and how it's factored into the presidency. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University. Her books include Women in the White House and Mad Men and Politics. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on today.
What was your reaction when it was first announced that Trump's resort would host this international summit?
Well, I guess I was a little bit surprised because there's been so much approach and to some degree pushback on some of the sort of not requirements, but encouragement of various foreign entities to stay in the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. And then there's been some controversies about like Mike Pence's trip to Ireland and him staying at another Trump property while there. And there are a number of lawsuits that are going on around this. And so to have the president basically sort of say, well, we're going to have the G7 meeting at one of my hotels seems a lot.
I want to give a listen to President Trump talking today at what was billed as a cabinet meeting. The press was there. It went on for about 70 minutes. Here's some of what he had to say related to the emoluments issue.
Other presidents, if you look, other presidents were wealthy. Not huge wealth. George Washington was actually considered a very, very rich man at the time. But they ran their businesses. George Washington, they say, had two desks. He had a presidential desk and a business desk. I don't think you people with this phony emoluments clause, and by the way, I would say that it's cost me anywhere from $2 to $5 billion to be president. And that's okay, between what I lose and what I could have made. I would have made a fortune if I just ran my business. I was doing it really well. I have a great business. I have the best properties.
Let's focus in on the part that a lot of people have quoted there, the you people with this phony emoluments clause, Lily.
Yeah, well, Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution and Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, they're both there. I don't think they're phony. I read them every semester with my students in my Intro to American Politics class. And Article 1, Section 9 in particular is part of a section of the Constitution where things are prohibited, either specifically to Congress or to sort of the federal government in general. So, you know, there can't be any titles of royalty given out. But there is a significant prohibition in Article 1, Section 9 with regard to any public officer. And so Trump would be, because he's president of the United States, a public officer. And no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind whatsoever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So that's kind of where we are with Article 1, Section 9.
Right. And that's people raise concerns. OK, if a diplomatic delegation decides to stay at a Trump resort or hotel, as you mentioned, or the president of Ukraine mentions in a phone call, according to the partial transcript released by the White House, that he had stayed in a Trump resort. That's the kind of thing that might raise concern under that.
Yeah. I mean, there is this, you know, sort of indirectness with regard to, say, coming and staying, if you are the Saudi delegation, as they have done, coming to Washington, D.C., staying in a Trump property and doing business with the United States, specifically with the Trump administration. But that's an indirect sort of situation. But having the president basically say, we're going to have this G7 conference where all of these people are going to be coming from all of these countries, as well as all the press that goes along with it, and all of the support teams that go along with it, and all the security that goes along with it, and it's going to be at my property. That seems like it may be in violation of that prohibition in Article 1, Section 9.
Have we seen anything comparable to this before? President Trump mentioned George Washington. I've seen some historians say a little different case, but are we in an unprecedented territory here?
Well, you know, we've had other presidents over the years who have had wealth and they've had business interests. Famously, Jimmy Carter had to put his peanut farm into a trust. George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush put all of their businesses into what are called blind trusts so that they are completely separated from them. President Trump, when he came into office, sort of put his interest into a trust, but the trust is being run by his sons. So it's not necessarily as disconnected as I understand it, and I am not an accountant in this regard. It's not as disconnected as putting all of your businesses into a kind of a blind trust and having it completely separated from the decisions that you're making.
And the president referred to my business. I have a great business. I have the best properties. That suggests a lack of distance.
They're also still his, and they have his name on it. And that was also one of the discussions, even if he said that the Miami property was going to be providing all of the capacity for the G7 meeting at cost, there's still sort of all of these potential ways of making money over advertising and you know, sort of media focus, which, again, is not something that's necessarily quantifiable in the cost of a room per night.
Who enforces the emoluments clause when it pertains to the president of the United States?
Well, this again comes down to Congress and Congress's oversight, and there was starting to be a move in Congress before the president basically said we're not going to have it there, that they were going to come in and potentially vote to prohibit this kind of a situation. And this may also contribute to more of the articles of impeachment in terms of violations of the emoluments clause. And we have a second, as I said, there are two places where emoluments are mentioned in the Constitution. And the other places in Section 2, which is specific, or Article 2, which is specifically about the president. And it says that the president shall not receive within the period that he is elected any other emoluments from the United States, being the government itself, or from any of the states. So if the United States is renting rooms in the Doral, then that may also be a violation of the Article 2 prohibition.
In our last few moments, Lily, what are you watching for next on the emoluments issue?
Well, again, it's up to Congress on whether or not they're going to go any further with this if they are pursuing it. And there are quite a few lawsuits going on at this point by various entities, including like the state of Maryland, that are moving with regard to suggesting that there have been violations thus far with regard to the emoluments clause.
Lily, thanks a lot for joining us again.
It's my pleasure to be here.
That's Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University. Her books include Women in the White House and Mad Men and Politics. She joined us for a look at the emoluments clause in light of President Trump's recent decision to host an International Group of Seven summit at his resort in Florida. He since backed off from that plan.